Well, good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome back to another episode of 747 Conversations. It's your host, Chris Shembra, and we're so excited that you've chosen to be here with us, right? You could have been anywhere in the world, maybe not the world, anywhere else in your home today, but you chose to be here with us. If you're just coming here for the first time, welcome. If you look back through our podcast archives, you'll see the 190-something episodes of us bringing on some of the world's best leaders to share the stories of how they got to where they are today and the people who helped them along the way. You've stumbled onto an episode of gratitude and empathy, diversity, equity, inclusion, belonging. For those of you that keep coming back, we thank you for joining. If you haven't clicked that subscribe button yet, we invite you to do so today. And you're going to see in your inbox a pop-up every week, once a week, of us bringing on, whether it be Fortune 50 founders, Academy Award winners, Super Bowl champions, award-winning actors, or more. But we're glad to have you here today for a really special episode. Today's conversation is going to be co-facilitated by our dear friend, advisor, facilitator, amazing, amazing sister, Lori Kornmester. And she curated today's guest. Today, we have Rosa Nunez. Rosa is currently the Director of Diversity, Equity, Inclusion at Foley Hoag, a wonderful 600-something person law firm based out of Boston, Massachusetts. They're doing great work. She is really leading and championing a proactive diversity and inclusion initiative. She's done it all, right? She has championed Latinx initiatives, both as head of diversity and inclusion at Omnicom Media Group, but also of a member of the global diversity, equity, inclusion team at Accenture. She has operated at the world's highest level in the DEI space, and now she's tackling the legal space. We're going to have those conversations and so much more today. Rosa, welcome to the podcast. Lori, what made you reach out to Rosa in the first place? Honored.
Thank
for this.
You. Listen, so excited to be here. You know, I always say diversity, equity, and inclusion requires a unique set of skills. You have to be resilient. You have to be brave. And you have to meet people at where they are. And Rosa really embodies all of that. I saw her work, and she had very important things at very important times to talk about and is really a thought leader in the space. We're just delighted to have you today, Rosa.
Thank you so much, Chris and Lori, for having me and for the wonderful and generous introduction. I'm happy to be here and I'm looking forward to this conversation.
Thank you for being here. Now, to all our listeners, you know, our commitment is to the science, the psychology, the philosophy of gratitude, and that's going to steer a lot of our conversations today. You also know we've used the principles of gratitude to spark over 500,000 relationships around the dinner table or at our virtual gratitude experiences in the last 6 years. And at every single one of those experiences, we ask the same question. And that's the question we have to start us off with here today. Rosa, if you could give credit or thanks to one person in your life that you don't give enough credit or thanks to, not what are you grateful for, but who have you never thought to thank, who would that be?
Wow, that is that's a tough question. I mean, does it have to be one person? Because I do have a couple of categories.
Tell me more.
I'll tell you. I have two categories of people that I am really grateful for. So the first category is probably a handful of folks that throughout my life discounted me. that throughout my life wrote me off, or, you know, told me that I will never amount to anything, or that, you know, my circumstances or weaknesses will hold me back. And those folks, you know, I'm really thankful because that fuel me and help me continue to evolve and drive and improve and work harder just to make sure that, you know, that they weren't winning, right? And what else is better than, you know, massive, there's just massive success when you have people like that. You have to really work really hard to show them that they're wrong. This is not who you are. And then I also have and the other bucket of folks that always believed in me and that always, you know, provided a seat at the table or an opportunity where I at times did not believe in myself. Right. And those folks gave me the confidence, the opportunities, connecting me with folks that opened doors for me. So I do have, like I said, I have those two buckets of folks that discounted me, discriminated against me, held me back, took credit for my work, and telling me that I was not going to do anything, right? Giving me the fuel and making me hungrier every day to prove them wrong, right? And then I have the other bucket of folks that really embraced me and said, you know what, Rosa, I'm uplifting you and I know you can do it and empower me. So I hope that answers your question, but I'm a product of those two things.
It's an amazing dichotomy because it's so relatable to all our listeners. You know, if you're tuning in and you're saying, God, I've had some really good people in my life and they really gave me some positive benefits, but I've also got some pretty negative people in my life, but I can actually trace back the positive consequences and benefits of those negative experiences. What's an example of that?
I mean, there's just so many examples, Chris. You know, as you know, I'm an immigrant, right? I came to the U.S. when I was 18. I always say that I'm the generation because we had no point of reference. We had no family. It was just my mom and I really trying to achieve the American dream, right? That's what we all come here for. And, you know, I had all the ads stocked against me, you know, not speaking any English, being economically disadvantaged. I mean, you name it. And every time I, you know, with work, my first opportunity at work, you know, you have the imposter syndrome. It doesn't matter how much you study, how much confidence you have, there's going to be a day where that's going to show up. And I had that. I had a lot of that in my career. And I wish I could tell you that I still don't have it, but there's times that it comes up, you know, it's something that we have to continuously fight against. And I had the imposter syndrome a lot when I was starting my career, and I encountered a horrible manager. I mean, talk about someone that made me feel like I was worthless. At the beginning of my career, you're not, you know, you don't deserve it. You're not here. You're going to be here just a couple of years. This is not for you. And, again, like situations like that, examples like that early on in my career really, gave me the energy and the drive, that I needed to prove them wrong. Right. Mm. And one of the things that I took away from that experience, for example, is that what I call the reverse role model. You know, she taught me everything that I don't want to do with the people that I work with. So it's a great experience because now I know how to lead effectively and how to lead with kindness and how to lead with respect and how to value folks for who they are and what they bring to the table and not judge them based on their background or their story or, you know, limit their success because of what I believe to be successful.
Mm.
So I hope it gives you some insight into or something, an example of, you know, why I say what I say, but
I mean, I love it. And here's what I'll tell you, Rosa. I wish I met you early in my career because I didn't have that sort of spirit. So I love that you were able to shape that. And this is, again, this is kind of the human piece behind what makes you who you are. One of the things I wanted to ask you is you have a strong voice in the Latin community. You know, what do you think is most needed in the Latin community, you know, today? Like, what is most important? What do they need to hear from us today as it relates to DE&I and B?
Yeah, well, that's a great question. I think the Latin community, one of the things is that we don't have representation in many areas, right? We are one of the biggest or the biggest minority group in the US, and we're still underrepresented across the board. Right. There's a lot of systematic issues happening in the Latino, Latinx community, from lack of access to opportunities, to lack of access to healthcare. I mean, think about it. We're going through the pandemic, and a huge part of the Latinx community has been impacted even greater than other communities because, you know, a lot of Latinx folks are the front are frontline workers, right? They are under or non-insured because of the work that they do. It's a community that has been marginalized for many, many years, stereotyped against. It's a community that has been minimized, especially because of, you know, the language barrier for many of the immigrants that come into the States. But it's a community that actually is thriving. You know, we are a community that we are we're driving the economy in the United States. You know, we have made strides in home ownership and building businesses, but we still have a lot of need and a lot of help, and we need people that look like us in leadership roles that are advocating for us. We need a lot of more attention to our issues. There's a lot that the Latinx community needs, and the energy is there, the desire is there. We have a generation that is driven, that is ready, that is willing to do the work. We just need access to those opportunities and someone that continues to advocate and minimize stereotypes against the community. I mean, we're not all, you know, we're not, it's a community that has been stereotyped for many years for the wrong things, right? From taking jobs to being criminals to jumping the border. I mean, you name it. And, you know, you have to understand that there's folks that haven't been exposed to the community that do believe all of that. Right? That do see me and think that I am, you know, someone that has 20 kids and living in, you know, on welfare, because that's what they see in the media. And they haven't been exposed to my culture. They haven't been exposed to the community, the Latinx community here in the US. So education is huge about who we are and what we bring to the table and where we're going. I mean, we are going to be the biggest minority in the United States in the next 20 years. We're driving the economy. The spending power of the Latinx community is insane. I'm talking about trillions of dollars that we're driving the economy. We're driving the economy in the US. So we just need more help. We just need more education. Mm. And we need access to opportunities and systematic changes.
Love it.
Now, Rosa, you have a large challenge on your hands. Right now, you have gone right into the belly of the beast, a historically old, white, male, legal space, and you're creating change from within. What do you personally love about rising up to this challenge? And what are some ways that you're creating educational opportunities for this kind of archaic industry?
That's a great way to put it. It's extremely archaic. I mean, and I think that's exactly why I'm in this industry, Chris. It's an industry that, of course, is, as we know, extremely behind in the D&I space. And the reason is because there was no need to change. You know, you have attorneys, and let's call it like it is, you know, why older male attorneys that have been doing this job for many, many years, that are multimillionaires that never had to think about diversity. You know, if I'm doing my job and I'm making money and I make my clients happy, why do I need to think about bringing women on board? Like, why do I have to think about, you know, bringing people of color into my team when I've been extremely successful, right? So the thinking has always been there. What's happening now, Chris and Lori, is that the clients that they represent are changing. Right? The clients are changing. The clients demand diversity. I mean, again, people of color, we are driving the economy in the United States. So clients are, especially big corporations that have been focusing a lot on DE&I, they want to make sure that they are sourcing, and then they have firms that are also investing in DE&I, that represent their values, that live their values, that share the same objectives and the space. So it is an industry that has been sleeping for many years and is now forced to wake up. And there's a lot of opportunities. There's a lot of low-hanging fruit, I think, for me at Foley Hoag. It is a firm that has had a history of working a lot in DE&I, but I am the first one to come in and do it formally. For me, it's just exciting because there's just so many low-hanging fruit, because nothing has been done before to really transform the industry the way that we need to transform it. So I am excited about the challenge. There's a lot of people with great intentions. They just need to know what to do. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I always say that it's never too late to do the right thing. Mm. So, now better. It's better than never. And with the right people on my side and the support, I know that we can start, you know, driving change in the right direction.
No, I love that, Rosa. You know, for people that might be stepping into a new space like this, right, kind of paving new path, I certainly have done that many times in my career. And there's often sort of a blueprint that you kind of roll out, right? And you say, here are three things that I just have to do in order to make this successful, for people to believe in this. So what advice would you give, and lessons that you've learned, like maybe your top three things when you come into this sort of situation that you kind of look to sort of implement, right, in your journey?
Well, that's a great question, Lori. So I've been in this space for a little bit. I'll probably say over 15 years I've been in this space. And I've lived and have gone through everything. Like I mentioned before, I started very junior in my career and started to go up the ranks. And I've seen things, and I've sat in different areas of the D&I space and had the opportunity to build departments in my two prior organizations. So when I worked at Omnicom, I built their D&I practice in the media group. And then at Burson, Kahn & Wolf, I built and created their D&I department. And now at Foley, I'm doing the same. And what I can tell you is the key to success is, number one, you have to have the support of the people that are making the decisions at the top. I mean, if you don't have the support, there's nothing that you can do that is going to make things better in the organization. And when I talk about support, I mean, it has to be authentic. Mm-hmm. It has to be an authentic need and desire to make the organization more diverse, more inclusive, and more equitable. because you do have organizations that tell you, oh, yeah, you know, we are in, we're definitely invested in diversity, equity, and inclusion. Rosa, come and take this job. It's going to be fantastic. It's all smoke and mirrors when you get in there. You don't get the support that you need. You don't get the resources that you need. The minute that you start making people feel uncomfortable, then Rosa is not for us. She's not a good fit because she's making me do work that I don't want to do. And this is when the authenticity comes. When someone is, the leadership team in an organization is authentically wanting to change, they're embracing you. They are embracing being uncomfortable. They are embracing the need to invest in DE&I. I mean, it is an investment. It's not just an investment of resources, like human resources. It takes money to do this work. And you have to put your money where your mouth is, right? So when you have authentic leadership engagement, it shows. And then it makes my job totally, completely different and easier because I know that whatever I do, I can go back and say, hey, you know, we made a mistake or we had a success. I mean, how can we do it better? And I know that they're always going to be there to support the work that I'm doing because they believe in me and they believe in the mission. Another thing that I will say, Lori, is you have to meet people where they are. When you come into an organization for the first time and implementing a program like this, you are going to have folks that are extremely, you know, passionate about DE&I, and they, you know, are ready to see the, you know, the change and how do we get to the next level? And now Rose is here. Tomorrow we're not going to be biased, you know, because the expectations are crazy. And then you have folks that are going to be very resistant. You know, why are we doing this? Do we really need this? We don't have a problem with diversity. Look around. You know, what about, I don't know what inclusion really means. What are you talking about? So you have all those things happening in the workplace. And what I always say is that you're not going to be able to make everyone happy. You're not a taco, right? At a party, you're going to have to come in and really understand where everyone is and give folks that are not where you want them to be an opportunity to get there without being forceful. And you only can do that by showing them the way, really, you know, proving and explaining and education and it takes a lot of effort, but you have to make sure that you do that. You meet people where they are. And I think that that's one of the two things that I will suggest for anybody embarking in this journey. Number one, make sure that you have the leadership on board and that is real and is authentic. And number two, you have to be conscious that not everyone's going to be on your side and that's going to be okay. You just have to go and do your job.
It sounds like there's a lot of empathy in that, right? You want to have leadership buy-in of people who can authentically empathize with and understand the change that needs to be made. But you also have to empathize that some people aren't capable of making that change right now, and right, they're going to take time. And so it's empathy on both sides of the conflict.
Yeah,
and that's a very mature approach.
I just think that there's no other way, you mm-hmm. know, because when you are building a, for example, in my case, a practice around diversity, equity, and inclusion, in an industry that hasn't historically been at the mm-hmm. forefront of this. I mean, my firm has been around for 75 years. So there's a lot of behaviors and beliefs and, you know, habits that have mm-hmm. been embedded into the DNA of the firm for over 75 years, right?
One of the things that you mentioned earlier, that's one of the perceived problems, is that just some populations haven't had access to other kinds of populations in order to understand them and empathize with them and connect with them. For instance, it's very easy for someone living in a certain type of way would look at you, for instance, and just assume you were poverty stricken and that you're a single mother of 20 and you're this, just because they'd never actually met or engaged in an authentic way. So what types of experiences are you putting together in order to bridge those gaps between the different communities that you're trying to pull together?
Yeah, that's a great point. And you know, what I say to that, back to my point, is that there's a lot of people that live in a bubble, right? Mm-hmm. They go to the same places. They have their, you know, the same network, the same school. They don't have to get out of their bubble because they have everything. And when I'm talking about the bubble is I'm talking about socioeconomics. I'm talking about racial differences. I'm talking about, you know, gender identity.
Neurodiversity.
Right. If I don't have to associate myself, for example, with a person of color, because my network is not of color, you know, I might not know what's happening there. Yeah. I don't know anything. All I know is what I hear, maybe through the media, the news, through some folks hearsay, but I really haven't embedded myself into that culture to really understand what's happening, right? Because I don't have a need for that.
Yeah.
So, for example, in the industry, in the law industry, it's a very elitist industry, right? Where it's been, like we mentioned before, very male, highly educated, white, dominated for many, many years. So a lot of those folks haven't had to reach across the aisle for anything before, right? So what I'm trying to do at the firm that I am right now, and what I've been trying to do, is provide those opportunities so that they can learn and understand other people's point of view and perspective.
Wow.
Have access to, you know what, let me listen and hear the story of this person that just, you know, talk to
and
me.
And I love that, Rosa, because you know what, so many times, to your point, diversity, equity, and inclusion programs are something that we watch, right? Racially biased training, or, you know, all of these things. And those are helpful. I don't want to discount any of those because those are really important. But there's a piece that Chris and I started to recognize that was missing. And that's that human connection piece, the let me hear your story. And once we leave together, we actually understand that we have more in common than we have different. And wow, I have a new perspective on this person that I'm working with that I just had no idea that they were highly educated, right? That they come from a good pedigree, that, you know, all of that kind of thing, or that they struggled. So that's good. Yeah.
Rosa, I love the metaphor of reaching across the aisle, listening to their feelings and perspectives, listening to their stories. As we start to wind down, I want to pull up a sentence that you said earlier, and I want to gain clarity on it. You were mentioning giving gratitude to the tough experiences in your life where people discounted you or wrote you off. You said two things. You said that some of those people took credit for your work, and you said that some of the people perceived that your weaknesses would hold you back. So here's the question for DEIB. Is it that we don't want to connect with people who are different than us because we're jealous of how good their work is? Or is it that we don't want to connect with people who are different than us because we perceive that they are less than, or they are filled with more weaknesses than they have strength? Or is it a combination of both? What do you see more of out there?
That is a very complex question. And how I'm going to try to answer it is a combination of both. It is a combination of, number one, I've never had to do that before, and I live my life okay. Again, in the bubble. I don't know why I have to do that right now. And number two is, of course, the assumptions and the stereotypes. And, you know, just because I'm part of the minority, everyone else is less than, right? Because that's what I've, you know, this society that we live in has been created for a minority population, where everything around us, you know, you walk around the streets, has been built for a group of people that are, you know, given the privileges and earn privileges that they really don't deserve. Not because they don't deserve it, but because we all equal, right? But when you walk outside, this society is the way that it is because a group of people decided that this is the way it's supposed to be. Yeah. So for example, this is how I'm going to, you know, frame it. For example, Chris, I am a Latina. we're very clear on that. I'm Dominican, from the Dominican Republic. My hair is curly and wild. And, you know, what you see is a lot of product to keep it straight. But, you know, I have to go to a very specific place that they know how to deal with my hair in order to get my hair styled. For example, that is what we call privilege. So if I walk outside, there's going to be 20 hair salons that someone that is in the minority can walk to and get their hair styled. I have to drive 20 miles to be able to find someone that can style my hair.
Right.
Right.
So I know this. I know. I'm nodding because I live that. Right.
Right.
And you drive 20 miles after you've had two conversations about what you mean by curly hair. And I'm going to walk in and look blonde, but as soon as it goes in the water, you're going to find out that I'm, you know, of African American descent. Right.
Right. Right.
Now you've got a problem on your hands.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's the lack of, it's the lack of awareness. That's number one. Number two is the lack of understanding that privilege exists and that privilege is not something that we can just forget that privilege is here. And privilege can be subtle, just like the example that I just shared with you. It can also be very subtle as, you know, again, I'm Latina. We make Latin food in my house, the plantains, the beans, all of that. For me to be able to find food that aligns with my culture and my ethnicity, I have to go to a specific grocery store that is probably 20 miles away, when I can just walk across the street into a grocery store and find all the foods that are historically being associated with the Caucasian population. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's just very subtle.
It is. And Russa, listen, I love that, because there are so many times that I talk about, as a person of color, that we have to put our armor on in the morning. And somebody said to me, you know, what does that really mean? I said, because you don't know what it's like to get anxiety about going into the coffee shop, right, and just making sure that we're going to be served appropriately, or going to dinner where I go up and do the reservation usually because I'm the more acceptable face. And then my whole crew comes in. Otherwise, sometimes we're sat in the back of the restaurant and things of that nature. There's a lot of anxiety that is in us as it relates to just going out and dealing with very common things that people just don't even need to really understand every day, right? And so it's hard. So as you think about those things and you talk about that anxiety, and you talked about the younger generation, right? And kind of they're not going to stand for it. So what are you seeing from this younger generation? Because I think they get a little bit of a bad rap. And I tell you, I also see them as a force to be reckoned with. So I'd love to hear what you're seeing from the younger generation.
This is an amazing generation. I mean, the generation that is coming right behind us is the most, I will say, the smartest generation ever, because they have access to all kinds of technology that, for example, I didn't have access to. You know, in order for me to find information on how to go to the library and get a book, there was no Google. I had to go to the computer center in my college in order to do my homework. Now people are walking around with a laptop. So I think the evolution and the capabilities and the innovation that comes with this generation is amazing. This generation is the new generation, they are very impatient. Because everything has been given to them real time. Again, right. The information. So they're a little bit impatient, but I think that's a great thing. Because, for example, in the space of diversity, equity, and inclusion, they want to see change now. Tomorrow and a year from now and 2 years from now is not longer acceptable.
Mm-hmm.
So what they're doing is, which I love, is that they're going into an organization, right? It's the, you know, first right out of school, and they're demanding change. And they are fighting for change, and they do not accept excuses. Their expectations about work is very different than our expectation was when we started to work. For example, I don't know about you two, but I was grateful just to have a job, right? When I started working, I was putting my head down. I don't want to ruffle any feathers. Do not ask me any questions that is going to offend anybody. I just need to be able to be here and have a career here. The younger generation is not for any of that. They're there. They're coming in. They want to be heard. They want to, they demand change. They demand flexibility. Their career paths are very diverse. Some of them want to, be executives. Others are just here for the money. Right. And that's okay. They're not as loyal as we were when we started. So it is a very interesting generation, and I'm all for it because we needed that. We needed the generation that is challenging the work that we're doing, and is challenging. They're challenging leadership in organizations, and they have to get, CEOs and leaders of many, many corporations, they really have to think about it, because this is the new generations are their new workforce. So change is not even an option. They have to change the way that they're doing things in order to attract and retain the best talent.
Yeah. What's one big thing we can see on the horizon for you and Foley regarding this space within the next few months? What are you proud of that's coming down the pipeline?
We have so much going on. We will need like 22 hours for that. But there's just so much work. We're not perfect by any means. We started on this journey 2 years ago. We have a lot of work to do. But we are doing a lot to retain our folks, not just to attract. We've done a lot of, a good job attracting, especially the younger generation. Our upcoming generations are more diverse. So it's easier for us to onboard junior associates from different backgrounds now, easier than probably 10 years ago. But once they're here, how do we retain them, right? That's the question. So we've been taking a closer look at our policies and practices, making sure that we identify any red flags, any systematic issues that are preventing our, for example, associates of color to truly be successful at the firm. So we've looked at compensation, right? Equitable compensation. We looked at billable credit. So, attorneys is all about, hours and billable hours. And are those attorneys that have been working hard to promote a culture of inclusivity at the firm, doing the recruiting, engaging in all the D&I events, are those attorneys getting the credit that they deserve for that, or they're not? So we're working a lot on those things. We just came out with a unlimited billable policy for legal recruiting and diversity and inclusion, which means that any attorney that is working on D&I issues, either leading an affinity group or working with the schools on recruiting, they now can bill unlimited hours a year, and those hours are added to their
wow,
their goal.
That's huge. That's
huge.
Yeah, that's huge.
Mm-hmm. And we're the only firm that I can tell you that has unlimited hours. Most firms, they have a cap, either 50 hours you can put towards, you know, diversity work, or 20 hours. And we said, you know what, if we're going to do this right, if we really, again, authentically want our folks to help us be a better place to work, we need them to be on board. And how can we do that and be equitable, right? Making sure that you get credit for the credit, you get credit for the work that you're doing. Historically, people of color and women have been the one tasks with those things, right? The D&I work and the recruiting, you know, and if I'm a person of color, I'm going to show up at this recruiting event at the law school, just because we need to recruit diversity into the firm. And those folks were not punished, but they weren't given the credit that they deserved at the end of the year. Those were hours that they could be billing, that they were investing in the advancement of D&I and culture at the firm. Now, if you are an ambassador, you are going to get the credit that you need. And it's equitable, because if you weren't engaged before in D&I work, now you have an opportunity.
Yeah.
That's to right. Do it and get credit for the time that you're spending. So we're very proud of that. And again, we're looking under the hood, making sure that people have the same access to opportunities. You know, are we staffing correctly? Are partners being inclusive when dealing with pitches and clients, or are they always going to the same group of people? You know, because I think access to opportunities is key, especially for people of color. Developing their skill sets, it's having access to huge opportunities, like high profile clients, goes hand by hand with developing skill sets, right? So, you know, creating systems that are more open and transparent and equitable, I think that that has been huge for us, and will continue to be in the next few months.
I love this unlimited billable hours. These systems, I mean, that's something alone that you can take for your entire legal DEI career and be known for, is creating the world's first unlimited billable hours program.
Well, I mean, I'm not going to take full credit for it. I have a lot of amazing people working with me at the firm.
Of course.
And managing partners have been incredible. And they have said yes to all these crazy ideas.
Hey, it's these kind of crazy ideas are actually statistically great for the company. You know, Google has what's called Google time. Yeah. Google, you can spend a great deal of time working on things that aren't directly within your job description. And that's where the majority of Google innovation comes from.
Right.
So these unlimited billable hours to go serve and to make things more equitable for others, I think is going to reap so many great rewards in the long run for Foley.
I'm happy about that. And I'm happy that the people that the attorneys and the associates that have been historically involved and engaged in this work now have an even greater motivation to continue to do this work, because they're seen and they're valued. And, you know, now they're bringing their friends, now they're raising their hand. Hey, there's another recruiting event. Yes, I'm coming. Not just because they're getting the credit, but because this is now another reason why they know that the work that they have been doing is valued.
I love that. Well, Rosa, this is tremendous. We could sit here, and as you say, we should dissect for 22 hours what Foley's doing next, but you guys are up to so much.
Thank you.
It's been a pleasure having you here today. Do you have any final words in closing, Rosa?
I would just say, Chris and Lori, thank you for having me. Thank you for giving a platform, creating a platform for folks like me. to share my story, to share the work that I'm doing. And it shows a lot. It tells a lot about who you are and what you're trying to achieve. So thank you so much for having me here.
Love having you. Lori, any final words before I close this out? Listen,
I mean, just what did I say, right? Powerhouse, you know, person, brave, right? Comes from the soul of who she was and not afraid to continue to do it. So I would just say, Rosa, keep doing what you're doing. You know, we're with you. We're going to continue to watch you. And we look forward to having you back in the next year or so and kind of see what you're up to. But thank you so much for just sharing today.
No, thank you. Thank you for having me.
Folks, you heard it here. I'm so glad that you tuned in. And I hope you realize how special this episode was. I mean, think about it. Where in your life have you discounted others or wrote people off because either you were jealous of the great work that they do, and you might have accidentally taken credit for their work, or you've written people off because you perceive that you are better than, and their weaknesses will hold them back? These are two forms of entitlement. These are either the I deserve or the better than box. And so it's easy to get trapped in those boxes, but we must get out of them when we perceive that we are there. When you stop seeing people as objects and you start seeing people as people, you can forge genuine human connection and celebrate the commonalities that we all have. So reach across that aisle. Do that next uncomfortable thing. You don't have to have an incentive to change. The change can come from within. Be authentically and intrinsically motivated. There's great work to be done in this world, and Rose is doing that good, hard work. So please support her cause. You're going to see her links to her LinkedIn and to Foley Hoag and follow all the great work that they're doing. Of course, Rosa is pioneering, and her colleagues are pioneering this work in this archaic old white man space, and they will need all the resources humanly possible at their disposal. So reach out for any ways that you could be of service to them, not to sell to them, but of service to their mission, because the greater we can impact we can have with these fine folk, the better the world will go around. So thanks for tuning in. You know, if you keep coming back, we're appreciative and grateful for your loyal listenership. If you're just joining us for the first time, I hope this has been an indication on the quality of conversations that we're committed to having here at 747. So keep going backwards through the podcast archives and keep listening to these amazing, amazing leaders telling these great stories. Hit that subscribe button again if you haven't done so as well. Share this episode with friends out there that are committed to similar work or are just looking for the first inspiration to start their journey. I think this was an episode that anybody can relate to. Thanks for coming. I hope y'all are having a phenomenal day on Earth. Remember, folks, it's your world. Go explore, and we'll see you next episode.